I always tell myself I'm not going to write on the board, and every time I do. But the topic tonight is going to be about keeping focused on the big picture. Or a subtopic would be, don't get lost in the details. And this the sermon topic came about a few weeks ago when I was, I'll give a little background on this. My company every year puts on a big engineering convention down in Austin, Texas. And they rent out the Austin equivalent of Bartle Hall. And they have about 3,000 or 4,000 people that come down from engineers, scientists, and college-level educators across the country. And there's things you can learn and expos. You can see what other people have done. But it's a really big deal for the company. So my job during this time is to make sure that everybody that goes down has a plan. They're enrolled in the seminars they want to be in, and so on and so forth. So it's my job to work with all the customers that are going. Well, I knew of one customer that was planning on driving down on his own. I also was going to drive down. It's only 11 hours. No big deal. So I called him up and I asked him if he wanted to come with me. And he said, sure. I know him a little bit from some brief business interactions, but I didn't know him very well. But when you spend 24 hours in a car with somebody, you get to know them a lot better, and you tend to cover a lot of topics. I'm not at all, I don't at all want to seem like I'm picking on him as I go forward, but just a little bit on his background. He does have a doctorate in electrical engineering, so I know that he has the ability to absorb information and process that and do something with it. But as we got along and got to talking, it came out that not only is he an atheist, well, he is an atheist, but he also believes that everything in this world evolved from nothing. Kind of the whole Big Bang theory, the theory of evolution. He was really into that, and he did a lot of explaining of the process to me, and he could describe how cells can mutate, and within certain classes of animals, you could have some adaptation to external environments. And he went on about this for a while. And I'm just looking at this thinking, you've got to be kidding me. And I don't know whether I've really never talked to anybody that honestly thought that before or what the deal is, but that really caught me off guard. I couldn't believe it. And it's an example in my lesson's not on evolution, so I'm not going to get into that. And this is not a God-driven evolution versus the 24-hour-a-day thing. Just to clarify that for everybody, there's two theories out there based on God creating the universe, the first chapter of Genesis. One of them is that it's 7 24-hour days, and the other theory is based on, like 2 Peter, is it chapter 3, verse 8, says a day is like 1,000 years, so that's, and it's common in the religious community to believe that the 7 days mentioned in Genesis are in actuality the 40 billion years or whatever that happens to be. As a side note, I definitely personally agree with the 24 7-hour days, and I'd be happy to talk with that somebody later. The only reason I'm giving you this background is because I'm kind of use this as we go through the rest. So if it would have been one or two of those statements, I would have just left it well enough alone because I still had 10 hours to drive in the car. But the fact that he went this way was just flooring to me, and it's a good example of somebody getting lost in the details. And he could explain how that cell could migrate and go for one thing, but when you step back and you look, okay, let's look at everything here, does this make any sense whatsoever? Look at the big picture. And it was so lost in those details that he couldn't do that. And I think there's a lot of people that get lost in the details. And I think as Christians, we can fall into that same trap. So my goal here is to keep us from getting into that trap, to keep us from forgetting what we're here for and getting lost in details. Now, I'm not going to say that details aren't important, because I think they're a very important thing. We need to understand details in order to be able to accurately portray the will of God to people who are going to meet us and that we come in contact with. I'm going to credit Shane here. He doesn't know I'm going to do this. But a few weeks ago, he went through the 30,000-foot view of the Bible, as he called it. And he put a timeline up on the board and just covered the major significant events as from creation to the Mosaical Law to Christ and then on into this dispensation. And I thought, wow, that's a great way to look at it. And I'm not sure that that it's necessarily revelationary. I'm not trying to pick on that, but I mean, you know what's up there, and it makes sense. But it's always good to step back and remind yourselves where these stories fit into the big picture. So where I'm going to take this is I'm going to take it into five. I'm going to call them points or five things to remember. Whereas when we get into things, we can ask these questions and see where they fit in to try to get a better perspective. And of my 5 points, I've divided them up into 2 halves. So I'll put it up on the board because the structure of it's getting a little complicated. But the first 2 points are what I'm going to call internal points. And they are, if you're studying yourself, or you're reading the Bible, or you have a Bible study in your home, and you come across some things that cause you some difficulty, and like, well, maybe that doesn't quite fit with what I understand. What's going on here? There are things that you can remind yourself of that help you put those into perspective. And then the last 3 points are putting things in perspective for other people. When we go out and we talk to people who aren't Christians or of a different belief than us, how do we go about doing that? What's our approach? So we can kind of develop a game plan before we go forward. So first, okay, God created us, and He's told us that He has given us this free will. So we have the ability to either choose to follow God, or we can choose not to follow God. Now, God's will is that everybody would choose to follow Him. And this is a very, very high level here. So He chooses that everybody will follow Him, but He will not force you to do that. If you choose not to follow them, He's not going to come in and knock you dead right away. He's not going to come in and force you to change your opinion. It's up to you. And that's the important thing to remember. So now that we're down here, this is our testing ground. This is our way of showing God that we want to be with Him and following Him as closely as possible. And convincing other people and working with them to learn who God is, learn the story of Jesus, and accept Him so that they can also enjoy those same gifts. But our goal here is to save souls. It's to save our own, and then to work with other people and teach them these things and show them the gifts that they would be missing out on if they didn't accept God's will. So that, first and foremost, is our goal, and that should be our focus. Now, in order to achieve that goal, there's lots and lots of tools that we have. All right. The best tool, the biggest tool, being the Bible. And that's the written word of God. The better we understand the Bible, the better we understand His overall perspective, and it gives us the resources to be able to help other people. There's also those of us sitting in this room. Everybody in here wants to help everybody else get to that same point. And we also have got the elders in the church, and there's all kinds of other resources that help us to do this. But we need to remember that the tools are for a purpose. And what I mean by that, and hear me out on this one, is that the tools are not a goal in and of themselves. Like I said, the best tool we have is the Bible. And the better we understand the Bible, the more we can help other people achieve these goals. But being a Bible scholar isn't the ultimate goal. That may be a personal goal. It should be a personal goal. But being a Bible scholar does not save you. I mean, there's people that have degrees in Bible. There's people that understand it inside and out that don't believe in God. I don't understand how that happens. But there are people out there with that belief. And the same thing, there's people that will read the Bible every day and understand what it says, and they don't apply it. So to remember that the tools are not an end in and of themselves. And that's something that I think it's always important to step back and say, okay, what is our goal? Let's make sure we've accomplished this and not gotten stopped somewhere along that path. Okay, the second point, God is always consistent. And what I mean by this is a lot of times when I'll read something, I'll get a little confused and I'll say, wait a minute, that doesn't quite fit with what I understand, or that seems to be a little bit out of place. But the important thing is that it's not. The Bible teaches the same thing from the beginning on to the end. And there's never a point internally where it's going to contradict itself from earlier. So if you run across one of these contradictions, one of two things, you have to look at it in one of two ways. One is that either your view of the Bible and the story in general needs a modification. You have a, I guess, not a modification, but your understanding of it isn't all-encompassing. So you need to change your view and figure out exactly what's happening with everything. The second part of that is that you could be reading the story wrong. And by that, I mean, just going to take an example, the parable of the talents, probably one of the most famous parables that Jesus taught. If you look at the parable of the talents and you didn't put it into any kind of perspective or look at what Jesus was trying to accomplish when He was giving that parable, you could look at the guy that had one talent who went and buried it in the ground and think, oh, I'm not supposed to save money. Because that's what he did, right? He took the money and he saved it in the ground and then he brought it back later. Well, that's not the idea. The idea is that you're supposed to use the gifts that you've been given to create something better than what was originally there. And that's where looking at it in perspective really helps bring that into view. And I apologize if that's not a good example, but I wanted something that was, that everybody was familiar with. So that kind of moves, the two internal ones are a little easier than the last three. So I want to move over now to the external side, because this is where it's more important, because not only are we dealing with things that we're thinking about internally, but we have somebody else's well-being and somebody else's, well, not souls in our hands, because ultimately that's just between them and God, but helping them reach that goal. So externally, the first thing we should always remember is the greatest command. And that is to do things with the spirit of love. So, like the 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is the love chapter. And the summary of that is, if it doesn't matter what you do, if you're not doing it with love in your heart, then you're not doing it for the right reasons. And it does not have the effect that you want. And then Matthew chapter 22 verses 36 through 40 says, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment of the law?" And then Jesus replied, "One, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." So he's saying, focus on this first. If you love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, then you will want to find out what he has written for you. You'll want to obey him, and the obedience and the actions will come out of that love. So you have to have that in place first. The second one is really more about what we're focused on tonight, and that's love your neighbor as yourself. If you're going out to approach somebody and you've got the attitude like, I'm just going to kind of tell him how he's wrong, and I'm going to tell him how he's right, and I'll bring a bunch of scriptures and just show him that he's wrong and just kind of lay it all out there in front of him, the chances of somebody listening aren't very good. If they do, then that's great. But if you approach them with love and they can tell that you really have their best interests in heart, then they're much more likely to at least listen to you and see what you have to say, knowing that you're doing this for them. You're not trying to get anything out of this. You're not trying to say, hey, I know this and you don't. And that's really important. And kind of a subcategory to this, it was interesting. When I was prepping for this, I went through all the passages in the Bible that talked about rebuking. And what I noticed was that rebuking is focused on internally to your brothers and sisters. So if they're doing something that's wrong and they know it's wrong and they're sinning, then it's our responsibility to help correct that action. But as far as rebuking goes, that doesn't mean just walk up to random people and say, hey, I noticed you were doing this. You're doing this wrong. There's a different approach to that. It's not quite as direct. So the idea is to understand where the person you're wanting to talk to is coming from, and to be able to know their situation and then kind of know what battles to pick, for lack of a better phrase. Know what they need to hear in order to get them to that next step. So you're going to have a different conversation with a non-Christian as you would with a new Christian. You're going to have a different conversation with a new Christian as somebody who's more experienced. And that's just the way that it is. We have to use our head and think about the love and getting that person to the next step before we approach them. So when we're doing this, we need to acknowledge their position. And by that I mean understand where they're coming from. And 3 and 4 are very closely correlated with each other. But the idea is don't study or don't spend too much time fighting over the little things. So I don't know how long most of the people in here have studied the Bible, but there's some people in here that have been doing this for a very long time, 40, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. And you can't expect people, and nobody expects people, as they first become Christians, to be at the same point that those of you who have been studying for 70 years are at. Hopefully you've grown through that time, and you're now, it took you 70 years to get there. And what I mean by that is that if someone hasn't been baptized, then maybe, and there's no blanket, I will preface this to say there's no blanket way to reach everybody. We're all unique, and that's part of what makes this so much fun, is everybody's got a different way that they're approached. And other than it being just a chance to talk about something, if somebody hasn't accepted Jesus and they haven't been baptized, debating about whether or not that first chapter of Genesis was literal 24-hour days or not is not what you should be focused on. They haven't accepted Jesus at all. And if you disagree with them on that topic, then you may never get anywhere else. And I think fundamentally we all understand that, but sometimes we forget about that when we go approach people and start to go down that track. So the idea is before you go, ask yourself these questions. Figure out what do they need and where are they coming from. The last one's kind of interesting, and it says, sorry, it's getting a little behind the podium here, but it says don't make up rules. And I don't think anybody does that consciously. I don't think anybody says, oh, I'm gonna make up a rule. And what I mean by that is if you come up with something or you do some studying or you just decide, I'm gonna start doing stuff this way, X, Y. And then you start doing it that way, and then you start getting the feeling that, oh, okay, well, everybody else should do it that way too. Or you start getting that pride, like, oh, okay, I'm better than them because I do this and I don't do this. And we've got to be careful where that stuff comes from. Like I said, I don't think that happens consciously, or at least I'd like to believe that that never happens consciously. But this is one that can really get us in trouble with other people when we approach new Christians, that can really be something that pushes people away. And I think we have to be very, very careful of this. And I was trying to come up with an example for this one, and I wanted to come up with something that was very neutral, so I think I've done that. But I'm going to take the example. There's some churches out there that believe that you use one cup for communion. And I will say I don't think there's anything wrong with using one cup. I've been in classes where we've talked about that before. If you want to use one cup, in my opinion, and I'm not trying to set any doctrine up here, go for it. You know, count me out personally. But I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just not necessary. But there are people that have taken that to the extreme and said, okay, well, not only if you use multiple cups are you wrong, but you're going to hell for that. And I don't know how it gets to that point, but I think that's a lot of where the tradition versus doctrine comes in. And I think everybody, all Christians everywhere should always ask themselves, you know, where did this come from? Is this something I need to be imparting? Can I biblically back this up? And that to me, I think, is the biggest thing that we need to ask before we go and preach to other people. Because if they see something and we're telling them something and we don't have anything to back it up, then we lose that credibility. So what I'm getting at here is just ways to help you, like I said before, just ways to help you kind of focus on the big picture and keep things in focus. And just as closing remarks, I just like to ask a few questions, and there's no response. It's just something for you to think about internally. But God has put us on this world to serve Him. So when you get up in the morning and you go through your day, when you go to sleep at night, when you go to sleep, is the world a better place than it was when you got up? And I don't mean the world a better place, like philosophically, but have you worked to push God's will and to advance His will and find other people or save other people? Has that been what your life has been about during that day? And I just encourage everybody to ask themselves that when they go to bed. There's a few things that we're commanded in the Bible to do from a big picture perspective. And it's really easy to get lost and to forget about these things and just go about day-to-day life. But we're commanded to feed the hungry. I just looked up online, and according to some sources online that seem to be pretty credible, tonight there's going to be 800 million people in the world that go to bed hungry. And none of those people are in this room. But it's just an interesting thought. And it's as, you know, it's as much for me as anybody, for sure. And I thought, well, what have I done to help those 800 million people? You know, have I done anything? Have I visited anybody that was sick in the last week, in the last month? So we're commanded to make sure that we take care of the widows. Are we checking in? Are we making sure that they have what they need? There's thousands of orphans in the United States, you know. Those are the kinds of things to think about. To, hey, what can I do? What can we do to help that? I mean, we're all here together. We're all here to make the best of this and obviously promote God's will. What better way to have an opportunity to preach to people than to help with some of these things, than to go out and do some of these things? So the invitation is going to be offered at the end. And the big picture is that God loves you and God wants you to choose him. And we offer an invitation after every service, and you can accept God then. You can accept him anytime. It doesn't have to be at the invitation, but it makes a good reminder for all of us, because we need that reminder that it is time to accept him. So at the end of the service, or now, if you want, feel free to, we would love to have you make that decision.